Hello, this is Tom Scott with the news from Ford County for the week of February 17, 2020. We begin our reading today with an article from the Ford County Chronicle entitled, Council Hears Objection to Proposed Location of Skate Park, Gibson City. Now that Gibson City's proposed skate park is moving toward reality, there is some question over its proposed location at the West Park on the city's north end. Four members of the Ed Day Memorial Park Committee, Billy Joe Denny, Dale Denny, Daniel Borders, and Logan Heavlin, were on hand at the February 10th meeting of the City Council to report raising approximately $185,592 towards the cost of designing and constructing a skate/BMX park that would eventually be turned over to the city upon completion. Committee members Billy Joe Denny said that after the expenses, the committee's Queen of Hearts raffle raised $150,592 over its two-year run. The committee previously had raised about $35,000 from other events. She added that various individuals in need or community organizations were recipients of about $24,000 raised from 50-50 raffles held on Queen of Hearts drawing nights. Mayor Dan Dickey acknowledged the committee had put in a lot of hard work. Alderman Aaron Franks labeled the effort fantastic as council members and audience alike applauded the committee's work. The committee said it believed the next step would be to have the city officials okay the proposed site of the skate park and then call in a professional firm for the skate park's design and construction. Dale Denny said the park might occupy a 130 by 100 foot square space on what is now a grassy area at the north end of the park. However, three representatives from the Gibson City Youth Baseball League's Board of Directors were present to voice concerns over the proposed location, even though the West Park site has been discussed as the skate park's anticipated location during the last 2 years. The skate park's committee even erected a future site of site sign at the location. Youth League board members Caleb Kraft said the north end of the West Park is frequently used as a team warm-up area, both during rotational practice schedule of 8 games and also during the league's annual tournament. Kraft asked if the skate park could instead be located at either the North Park or South Park. He said those areas might offer better crowds to notice the park and potentially better security. Board member Jenny DeShepis emphasized that the baseball group is not trying to rain on this parade now that the skate park is moving toward actual construction. She said the other grassy area at the West Park is not suitable for team warm-ups because it is broken up by a pavilion and playground equipment. Dickey proposed the two groups get together to discuss options and report back to the council. Dale Denny addressed the baseball board members by saying the skate park committee has no problems meeting with you. He said the size and layout of the skate park is not completely decided. However, Billy Joe Denny said the group is not looking to build a little bitty skate park. She said the plan possibly could be to build a park at the ESPN competition level with the hopes of attracting future competition. The skate park committee plans to work with SPA Skate Parks, a design-build contractor based in Austin, Texas. Alderman Susie Tongit suggested an open area to the west of the West Park might be used as a baseball warm-up area, although the city has a lien on the property after demolishing a house on it. Dickey said he believes the property is not yet owned by the city. In other council news, the council discussed Dickey's proposal to designate one parking space in addition to an existing handicap accessible space in front of each of the town's two downtown pharmacies as a 15-minute parking space for pharmacy customers. Dickey said the idea was brought to him by a senior age resident. He said it is especially important during inclement weather. Each reserved parking space would be located in front of the medicine shop and Scott's Family Pharmacy, both within a 2-block area on Sangamon Avenue. After brief discussion, council members voted unanimously in favor of the plan. City Attorney Mark Miller was directed to draft an ordinance to make the plan official and enforceable. The ordinance will be voted on at a future council meeting. Now from the Ford County Record, sale of Paxton Airport should be complete next month. The sale of the city's airport to a North Carolina man who intends to use it for his crop dusting business should be complete next month. Mayor Bill Ingold said David Rupsa of Roper, North Carolina, who owns Atlantic Ag Aviation Incorporated, has reviewed the proposed contract and the City Council should vote on it March 10th at its regular monthly meeting. The sale should be final March 13th. It has been 3 years since the city agreed in principle to sell the Paxton Municipal Airport to Rupsa. Then the City Council approved a letter of intent to sell the airport to him for $100,000 in cash and a note for $50,000. Under the terms of the letter of intent, Rupsa was to be required to operate the property as a public airport according to applicable Federal Aviation Administration regulations for the next 30 years. Also, Rupsa would continue to honor leases held by pilots using the airport's hangars. At last week's meeting, the City Council amended its gaming ordinance to allow 6 machines per business instead of 5. The state passed a law allowing the change. Also, the council made its usual annual $250 contribution to Pheasants Forever. For years, the local chapter has maintained and the grassland planted on the site of the city's old landfill. Also, the City Council adjourned that meeting to 7 p.m. February 25th to vote on 2 public works items. The meeting will be preceded by a 6 p.m. meeting of the Public Works Committee to discuss the purchase of a truck and what to do about replacing this salt storage shed. The March 10th meeting will be preceded by a 6 p.m. license, permit, and zoning meeting. Now from the Ford County Board, Roberts Mayor addressed County Board about wind farm issue. The mayor of Roberts told the Ford County Board that the village doesn't want to hurt Sibley and the Gibson City Melvin Sibley School District and keep those entities from a new source of tax income. Richard Flesner said the village board rescinded a resolution objecting to a proposed change to the county's wind farm ordinance pertaining to setbacks and turbine height, an action that would have required the full county board to pass any changes with a supermajority. But Ford County State's Attorney Andrew Killian said the village board rescinded the wrong ordinance and probably when the board meets again next month will redo its action. Killian said action the board takes may still not negate the need for a supermajority vote of the county board. Wait till next month, Killian said. A supermajority may be a tough standard for the county board to meet. It may turn out that various board members will abstain due to a perceived conflict of interest. The Zoning Committee will meet again on February 19th. Also, Health Department Administrator Lena Sample told the board that she has hired the county census coordinator. She said census packets will be sent out nationally March 12th. It will be the job of other census workers yet to be hired to go door to door in the county, encouraging residents to get the packets filled and returned. She said the department will help residents who walk in with questions and will allow them to fill out the census forms using department computers. Board member Tim Nuss told Sample that residents in his district, especially Melvin, are genuinely concerned about a recent television news report highlighting the cancer rate in the county. He asked what Sample could do to help. She pointed out that statistically, cancer rates don't amount to a cancer cluster, and that she emphasized that in the TV news report. We will continue to do prevention education and outreach, but I am not aware of any studies locally, Sample said. Also, Todd McNutt of MCS Office Technologies told the board that potential security issues behoove the board to hire his or another firm for more than 2 hours a week. McNutt said more time is needed to monitor the entire system, not just keep individual workstations up and running for possible virus and software. That means watching the fiber and the firewall and training employees. He said the email server needs to be moved to the cloud as the system is outdated and vulnerable to attack. Hackers come through the email, McNutt said. He did acknowledge that the county has limited financial resources. Supervisor of Assessments Kim Hooper told McNutt that his proposal will cost more money and that she wasn't very happy with the MCS service she was getting in her office. McNutt said the employee who worked with Hooper is no longer with his company and that he will make things better. Now from the Ford County Record website, 15 Central Illinois men arrested in FBI operation in Kankakee area. Urbana. Central District of Illinois U.S. Attorney John C. Milshire and FBI Special Agent in Charge Sean M. Cox of Springfield Division announced that 15 Central Illinois men were arrested over the weekend related to an FBI operation conducted in Kankakee County, according to a news release. The operation was conducted with the coordination and assistance of the Bradley Police Department, the Kankakee County Sheriff's Office, and the Kankakee Area Metropolitan Enforcement Group. The men have been charged in several criminal complaints with attempted enticement of a child to engage in illegal sexual activity. Some have also been charged with attempted sexual exploitation of children. The complaints were unsealed on February 18th as each made their respective initial appearances in federal court in Urbana. Each was ordered detained pending hearings scheduled later this week. According to the affidavits filed in support of the complaints, each of the men allegedly used various social media applications to contact and engage online with FBI covert employees posing as 14 and 15-year-old minors to make arrangements to meet the minor girl or boy with the intent to engage in sexual activity. Some of the men attempted to entice or coerce the minors to send them sexually explicit images. As the men arrived at or near the designated address in Bradley, they were arrested and taken into custody by FBI special agents, the Bradley Police Department, the Kankakee County Sheriff's Office, the Kankakee Area Metropolitan Enforcement Group. Assistant U.S. Attorney Ellie M. Pearson is representing the government in the case prosecutions. The defendants charged in the operation with attempted enticement of a minor are Joshua T. Koenig, 27, of Buckley, Jody L. Legacy, 45, of Kankakee, Shane R. Ferris, 23, of Bourbonnais, Nick Vincent Senior, 25, of Kankakee, Dale Martin Alvin Shearing, 26, of Bradley, Robert Sean Anderson, 50, of Paxton, Brian Rossi, 29, of Park Forest, and Timothy Lyle Dean, 37, of Bourbonnais. The defendants charged in this operation with attempted enticement of a minor and attempted sexual exploitation of a child are Matthew T. Gribben, 48, of Kankakee, Ryan I. Woodruff, 21, of Kankakee, Anmol Chug, 28, of St. Anne, Kyron Williams, 30, of Kankakee, Cole Montgomery, 25, of Danville, Joseph Adam Longenecker, 40, of Manteno, and Jazzy Simmons, 28, of Kankakee. If convicted for the attempt of attempted enticement of a minor, each defendant faces a minimum of 10 years and up to life in prison. For the offense of attempted sexual exploitation of a child, each defendant faces a minimum of 15 years and up to 30 years in prison. Members of the public are reminded that a complaint is merely an accusation. Each defendant is presumed innocent unless proven guilty, according to the news release. The cases were brought as part of Project Safe Childhood, a nationwide initiative by the Department of Justice to combat child sexual exploitation and abuse. For more information about Project Safe Childhood, please visit www.justice.gov/PSC. In other crime news, two arrested after extended drug investigation in Paxton. Paxton police arrested two after a month and a half long drug investigation. According to Police Chief Coy Cornett, Benjamin K. Mason, 22, of Paxton, and Aaron Rigsby, 26, also of Paxton, were taken to the Ford County Jail at 12:39 p.m. February 6th. He said after receiving a search warrant for a place in the 10th block of East Patton Street, the officers found $6,000 in U.S. currency, 3 ounces of cannabis, and paraphernalia. Mason was arrested for being a felon with a weapon and ammunition, controlled substance, 3 counts of delivery, and 1 count of obstruction of justice, as he was found to be flushing items. Rigsby was arrested for possession of a controlled substance and manufacturing delivery of cannabis. Now another story from the Ford County Board. Thawville man applies to state for marijuana growing license in Ford County. An Iroquois County man told the Ford County Board he has applied to the state to grow marijuana on 5 acres he owns in Ford County. Michael Crowley of Thawville told the board he won't hear anything back from the state until July. Crowley said his request was turned down in Iroquois County. He said he needs the board's permission as a prerequisite for a state permit. He said the application process has been an adventure so far. It's a long shot. He said he would be a craft grower. In response to board questions, he said the whole operation must be under roof in some type of greenhouse and would create up to 10 to 15 jobs. He emphasized that he doesn't want to open a dispensary. He would instead be selling to 2 dispensaries. Some employees might be processing the cannabis into other products like gummies. Crowley said the state has just 12 growers now, whereas California and Colorado have hundreds. The Zoning Committee will discuss Crowley's proposal at its next meeting on February 19th at 10 a.m. in the small courtroom where the committee continues to discuss revising its wind ordinance. In 2009, Crowley and his wife were accused of growing more than 2,000 cannabis plants in a farm field in Iroquois County. He pleaded guilty to a reduced charge and was sentenced to serve 180 days at the Iroquois County Jail and to pay a $40,000 fine. Crowley pleaded guilty in Iroquois County Circuit Court in 2010 to 1 count of unlawful possession with intent to deliver between 2,000 and 5,000 grams of cannabis, a Class 1 felony. As part of a plea agreement, that charge was reduced from a more serious Class X felony for possession of more than 5,000 grams of cannabis. 2 other felony charges were dismissed, one for unlawful possession with intent to deliver 30 to 500 grams of cannabis, and the other for unlawful manufacturing of more than 200 cannabis plants. Now from the Ford County Sheriff's Department. Ford County Sheriff issues appeal to citizens in fight against crime. Responding to the increasing number of people wanting to assist law enforcement officials and build a stronger partnership in the fight against crime, Sheriff Mark Duran, February 19th, announced that the Ford County citizens are being invited to become associate members of the Illinois Sheriff's Association. Membership appeals go out in the mail shortly. Individuals choosing to join the voluntary program can do so for as little as $20, while business memberships begin at $50. The funding provides critically important technical resources, training, and legislative support on key criminal justice issues, according to information in the news release. Contributions are tax deductible, and unlike other organizations in the state, the membership program does not solicit membership by telephone. With government funding becoming increasingly difficult to secure, the membership drive has taken on greater importance than ever before, said Duran. The funding is vital to helping us carry out our mission of making our communities safer places to live, work, and play. The program is committed to its no telemarketing policy and only sends invitations to citizens to become members by mail. Individuals that do not receive a membership appeal and would like more information can visit online at www.ilsheriff.org or may call or write to the Illinois Sheriff's Association, 401 East Washington, Suite 1000, Springfield, 62701. The phone there is 217-753-2372. Residents can also become members of the program by contacting the Sheriff's Office. The membership program was formed to provide citizens with an opportunity to lend their support to more effective law enforcement and to help local law enforcement officers protect the lives and property of citizens. As the need for building stronger public-private law enforcement partnerships in this country continues to escalate, programs such as this continue to grow in importance, Duran said. I encourage everyone receiving a membership appeal to consider joining forces with us by becoming an associate member. It's a valuable investment in the future. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Record and the Ford County Chronicle for the weeks of February 10th and February 17th, 2020. Erna Ann Bridges. Erna Ann Bridges, 89, of Paxton, passed away at 4:55 p.m. Sunday, February 9th, 2020, at Accolade of Paxton Senior Living. Funeral services were held Wednesday, February 12th, at the American Lutheran Church, with the Reverend Matt Bonfleth officiating. Burial followed in Beckman Cemetery, Rantoul. Memorials may be made to the American Heart Association. Ann Johnson. Ann Johnson, 86, of Gibson City, passed away Friday, February 7th, 2020, at her home in Gibson City. A celebration of life service was held on Friday, February 14th, at the American Evangelical Lutheran Church in Gibson City, with Pastor Jim Davis officiating. Burial was held at the Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Memorial contributions may be made to the American Lutheran Church or the Gibson Area Hospital. Ronald E. Sage. Ronald E. Sage, 76, of Paxton, passed away at 1:53 p.m. Thursday, February 6, 2020, at Mattoon Rehabilitation and Healthcare Center. Funeral services were held Sunday, February 9th, at the Bear Family Funeral Services, with the Reverend Deborah Dormier officiating. A private family burial will be at Pine Ridge Cemetery in Loda. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Phyllis I. Henniger. Phyllis I. Henniger, 91, of Buckley, passed away at 3:30 a.m. Saturday, February 15, 2020, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services were held Tuesday, February 18, 2020, at St. John's Lutheran Church in Buckley, with the Reverend J. Kevin Wyckoff officiating. Burial followed in St. John's Cemetery in Buckley. Memorials may be made to St. John's Ladies' Aid. Jean Ingram. Jean Ingram, 86, of Mahomet, passed away at 3:05 a.m. Saturday, February 15, 2020, at her home in Mahomet with her devoted family at her side. Funeral services were held on Thursday, February 20th at the Gibson City Bible Church. Memorial burial will be in the East Bend Memorial Gardens. Memorial contributions can be made to the Gibson City Bible Church. Carl Wayne Fairley. Carl Wayne Fairley, 83, of Paxton, died at 7:15 p.m. Friday, February 7, 2020, at Gulfside Hospice, Zephyrhills, Florida, of complications from a cardiac arrest happening January 19, 2020. Funeral services were held Saturday, February 15, at Bayer Family Funeral Services in Paxton, with the Reverend Tom Jones officiating. Burial followed in Lyman Township Cemetery, Roberts. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. William J. Atkins. Paxton. William J. Atkins, 80, of Paxton, died at 7:20 p.m. Wednesday, February 19, 2020, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A celebration of his life will be scheduled. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Cynthia J. Earle. Clinton. Cynthia J. Earle, 101, of Clinton, formerly of Aerosmith, died at 10:05 p.m. Saturday, February 8, 2020, at Liberty Village Manor Court in Clinton. A private family burial will be scheduled at a later date in Drummond Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Memorials may be made to the Arrowsmith Christian Church in Arrowsmith. We return to the news with a story entitled PBL Education Foundation Awards Grant. The PBL Education Foundation's grant program is off and running for the 2019-2020 school year. Several grant requests have been submitted and approved. Emily Wood, high school art teacher, requested funds for quality paint, brushes, rollers, paint sprays, tarps, canvases, and stepladders for her community art classes, which have doubled in size this year, to create murals in the high school. Wood was given $650 to purchase these supplies. Mary Ager, junior high art teacher, requested and received $658 for a pottery wheel, stating that it will, quote, add another dimension of knowledge and skill for all junior high students. Pottery has not been offered at this level before, allowing students to explore the process of clay building. Ager also added, this piece of equipment can really be a game changer for the art department. Clara Peterson's physical education teachers, Jake LeClaire and Amy Swan, received $806 for three new tumbling mats and a balance beam. The new mats will replace the current old worn mats, which have been used by the park and school district for many years. They plan to use them for the gymnastics unit, obstacle courses, yoga unit, and other games throughout the year, adding that they are very versatile and will be helpful in all the physical education classes at Clara Peterson. Wendy Niebuhr and the first grade team requested and received $414 for six Google Home devices. With this grant, we hope to enhance students' use of technology in the classroom by adding a component to our Google-driven school district, teaching students productive, useful, and safe ways to use artificial intelligence in their everyday lives. Stacy Johnson, PBL Junior High Guidance Counselor, received $750 to organize an 8th grade career conference day. The funds were used to secure a keynote speaker and supply lunch for other career professional speakers, giving students an all-day symposium to learn and be educated about all kinds of career possibilities. Lisa Allen, PBL High School Special Education Teacher, requested and received $1,000 to start a coffee cart business for her approximately 15 students in her Functional Life Skills program. Plans are to have the coffee cart business up and running at the beginning of the 2021 school year. The PBLHS High School's Ag Department received $2,000 towards the purchase of a plasma cutting system with standard software. This system will allow students to design, create, and build metal projects. The PBL Foundation wishes to thank all the donors who support their annual fundraising campaign, which raises the funds to allow them to support these types of programs and equipment, which have a profound impact on PBL students' lives. And that's all the time we have for today's reading. Just a reminder that this and all our weekly paper readings are available on our website. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again real soon.